Thank you. I see that I did put James's and Steve's work in here, but I didn't put Patrick's comments. So hopefully that'll be a little bit easier to follow, and I can refer to Patrick's comments. So as I read these, it did seem to me that they're all very closely related, starting with study 23. It says, ICANN-WHOIS policies should reflect national data protection laws, particularly in areas determined to have an impact on human rights issues. And if I look over at Patrick's comment...
But that was the old language.
Excuse me?
Yeah, you know, looking at the new stuff.
You're looking at the old language. You just read the old
language. Is that old language? Okay,
yes.
So the wiki doesn't have the new language.
Okay.
Okay, then I misunderstood what I got. Okay, Patrick's comment, what is the new language? Would somebody read the new language to me, please?
Yeah, the new language is some national data protection laws explicitly apply or have been adjudicated to apply to information submitted by GTLD registrants and made available via WHOIS.
Ah, got it. Yeah, I have that in front of me in the Word document. Thanks, Steve. And then Patrick's comment was, what is the intention of the words or have been adjudicated, quote unquote, to apply? So in other words, he's questioning the intention of those words or have been adjudicated to apply. Is it intended to mean only in those cases where a national government data protection authority court has said data protection laws apply? Now, James, do you want to comment first on that, or do you want to open it up? Or should I open it up for anyone?
I can comment, or Steve, if you'd like to comment. That was part of your addition.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Patrick's not on this call, right?
No, correct. He had a conflict. He's on an FSAC call.
Was he on our last call?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, and I think all of his questions really apply to something that we talked about last time, which was, are we looking for subjective legal analysis here, or are we looking for something closer to an objective factual investigation? And this number 23 actually, you know, I mean, it was obviously originally conceived as someone giving a legal opinion, and if we're trying to avoid that at this stage, then I try to clarify that we're really just asking people to see, is there something in a national data protection law that says something about WHOIS, or have there been decisions by courts or data protection authorities or others that have rendered this decision pretty much definitively in any country. So I think the answer to Patrick's question is yes, it is intended to mean only in those cases where a national government data protection authority or court has said data protection laws apply. That was the purpose of recasting the hypothesis so that it would be something objective and factual rather than subjective.
Any other comments on that?
David, I'm not entirely sure that our studies are limited to the factual. I understand the argument, but is there something in our charter that says that it's not improper to analyze the legal situation? It would seem to me this could be very useful. I'm thinking of a current set of emails going back and forth to Center on the mailing list in which a number of country codes discuss the way they deal with their data protection authorities. And it seems to be fairly clear that there are very limited judicial determinations, but there's a great deal of cooperation going on in which the, for example, UK and some other nations have dealt with the CCTLDs and worked out a reasonable approach to data protection. And it seems to me that's a useful subject for study, and that we don't need to limit ourselves to the pure factual aspect of judicial determinations.
This is Tim. Can I get in the queue?
Oh, yeah. It's Tim Stubbs. Can I get in as well?
And Steve, please. Or do you want me to answer the question?
Tim and Ken and then Steve, Steve Metellus. Okay, Tim?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I hear what Dave is saying, but I don't think that's what the proposed report or the proposed study is proposing. It sounds more like the proposed study is trying to make a determination about what is applicable law or something of that nature. And we've had several opinions bantered about in one who is working group or task force or another, and they conflict. So we could get one legal opinion and we could get another and they may not even agree. So I think that was the point of, you know, that there had been an adjudication or some decision that had been made that a certain law or regulation actually applies. And just based on what the study is proposing. So if there's a separate study being proposed with something different, then that would be a different issue. But I don't believe that's what this one is proposing.
David, could you put me,
yeah, I'd like to respond to that. I'd certainly be willing to consider a amendment to this that it makes it not limited to judicial decisions or adjudications. I think a factual study could be made of the things that are going on that are being discussed, for example, in the center list, where we could do a factual study that some data protection authorities have worked out agreements or policy with registries.
But is that, shouldn't the hypotheses be based on what the study is proposing? But that's my point. I'm not disagreeing with you, David. I'm just saying that studies seem to indicate something different. The full study from Kathy. Because it said, to determine legal requirements. So that's a different proposal than what your hypothesis doesn't really... might match some suggested study, but it doesn't match the Kathy suggested study here in number 23. That's all I'm saying.
Does that make sense, David?
Why don't you go ahead?
Okay, all right. We'll continue this. Ken?
Yeah, I guess, Chuck, what I'd like to do is I know Liz is on the call. I'd like to hope this may not be the venue to propose this, but at least this is a venue we can surface it in. It'd be nice if we could work out an arrangement somewhere down the road at one of the next ICANN meetings to get together with the CCTLDs with the specific purpose of discussing the management of data protection activities in the TLD space. We give it some lip service, but we really don't talk about dealing with these issues, and I think it's something that's going to be more and more important as we move into new TLDs and we continue to see the evolution in various countries of more enhanced data protection application towards the domain name space. So at least I'd like to hope people might consider surfacing this.
And Ken, did you have a suggestion with regard to this hypothesis?
Well, I'm leaning more towards supporting David in this case. I really believe that there's nothing wrong with surfacing this at this point in time. But, you know, if we're going to get a huge amount of pushback, then I guess I just have to live with it and hope we can move it forward in another venue.
Okay. Steve Metallis?
Yeah, 3 points. First, in response to David's initial comment, I think I'd agree with what Tim said. This group was asked to help develop the hypotheses for studies that would resolve key factual issues. And that's kind of the basis on which we discussed last week, trying to make these as objective as possible and keeping away from subjective legal determinations. Second, with regard to CCTLDs, that was the focus of one of the hypotheses that we talked about last week. And I'm now kind of flailing around trying to find it, but it was one of the earlier hypotheses in this area, talked about what are CCTLDs doing and are they doing it because of data protection rules, and I think that actually covers some at least of what David and Ken were suggesting that we get into. So I guess I'd maybe ask Liz if she has a better handle on this than I do.
I think it's 22, Steve.
Direct us to the, okay, it's 22. And finally, in response to David's possible amendment, I think, you know, we could take Patrick's comment to make it clear we're not just talking about court decisions here. He says, is it intended to mean only in those cases where a national government / data protection authority / court has said data protection laws apply? And I think that's an appropriate definition. It's not just a court. And if a data protection authority has told the CCTLDs that it applies, that's obviously relevant information. And if it's not captured by item 22, then it could be, I suppose it could be captured here. Thank you.
Is there a suggestion? Now, David, is it helpful to go back to 22, which you can find if you go back to number 22 in the table in the wiki? It actually, what we agreed on was that there's actually three parts of it. Part A is more restrictive who has policies than the general ICANN whose requirements have been adopted by some of the 30 top CCTLDs. B, CCTLD operators report that who has policies have been adopted in order to become compliant with the data protection laws of the territory. And C, CCTLDs are moving towards more restrictive who has policies motivated by national data protection laws. Does that kind of cover what you're getting at, David?
Yes, it does.
Okay, good. Okay. So maybe no amendment is necessary on the number 23? Is that an accurate conclusion on my part? Anybody have a suggested change to the proposed hypothesis, which I'll read one more time? Some national data protection laws explicitly apply or have been adjudicated to apply to information submitted by GTLD registrants and made available via WHOIS. Steve Metellus, did you have a suggestion based on Patrick's comment of any edits there?
No, I don't know how detailed we need to get. Adjudicated, to me, would cover if a data protection authority has said so.
Okay, so you didn't intend it to mean court, so that's okay.
No.
Any problems with that? Okay.
No problem.
Comment from someone?
No problem.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. Then we'll go to, and what I'm going to do is go through all of these that are kind of very closely related, and then we'll decide how to handle them in terms of grouping. Study 24, which was to obtain a representative sample of registrars' terms and conditions, to determine what percentage of sampled registrars is appropriately obtaining agreement to all of the terms required in Section 377 of the RAA. And the proposed hypothesis here is, there's two choices there, many or some, registrars are not obtaining agreement to terms required under Section 377 of the RAA. And any discussion on that hypothesis?
Chuck, this is Jim.
Okay, Tim.
Jim, actually, James.
Oh, Jim, I'm sorry.
just wanted to point out that the absence of obtaining in the first go-around was a typo. So that was not inserted to change the hypothesis at all.
Okay. And what's the preference? Anybody have any preference? The word many or some?
What about not all?
Not all registrars are obtaining agreement to terms required. Is that better?
Well, I'm saying that some are not. So
yeah.
I guess that's my preference.
It's Alan. I just came in after waiting 5 minutes for an operator. Can you tell me where we are?
We're on study submission number 24. And Alan, you really need to be looking on what James sent around because it's not in the wiki.
Okay.
So we're in area 2. We just finished study number 23 hypothesis, and you can comment on that one later if you have comments after this meeting. And then study 24 is what we're on right now.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Chuck, as I recall, at the end of last week, we had with Bertrand, we had a long discussion about many or some or majority, and I think
right.
We ended up with some on that one that we've been talking about. So that's why I was just suggesting some there.
Yeah, and
I don't feel strongly one way or the other.
No, I don't think there's too much difference between some or not all. So I'm okay with anybody opposed to some. There, Anybody have any other comments on this particular hypothesis? Okay. Let's go on to GAC recommendation number 12. I'll read it. First of all, since GTLD registries and registrars conduct business globally, which laws and which jurisdiction appropriately apply to their transactions and in particular to their WHOIS contractual obligations? And the proposal here for the hypothesis is, as reported by GTLD registries and registrars, as reflected in their contractual documents, or as adjudicated in relevant tribunals, the WHOIS contractual obligations of GTLD registries and registrars are governed by A, the laws of their local jurisdiction, or B, the laws of the jurisdictions of their registrants, or C, the laws of ICANN's domicile, California, USA, or D, some other jurisdiction. That's probably as good a crack as any at coming up with a hypothesis on that one. It's kind of a tough one, I think. Patrick's comment was, I don't understand the intention of the words here. Is it only as decided by a national government, data protection authority, a court? What about instances where a data protection law exists, but a data protection authority has not issued a formal opinion? Again, I don't know that we need to discuss that too much. Isn't it very similar to what we talked about in number 23?
It is. This is Steve. It is, and perhaps we want to say, take out the word tribunals there and put in fora or something like that, because it doesn't have to be a court.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Anybody disagree with that suggestion? A relevant fora. You got that, Liz?
Yes, I do.
Good, thanks. Okay. Any discussion on this hypothesis?
Steve, I'll be honest, here's the question. I mean, this is very challenging to turn a GAC question into a hypothesis. And I'm wondering if the A, B, C, and D are all intended to stay in a hypothesis, or are those choices that we would pick one on this call?
What was the intent, Steve and James, on that?
Well, the first four were really in James's original proposal. It seems to me that I think he's trying to cover the waterfronts. The answer is probably one of those. Got to be one of those.
Yeah, that's correct, Steve. I was just trying to box in all of the possible outcomes of trying to make something that was testable.
And this is Steve DelBianco, and I think all four are worth having in there, since they will help the consultants that we hire to go make these answers. It'll help guide them to answer those questions. For some, it'll be all of the above. But let's not kid ourselves. It's not really stated as a hypothesis, but that's okay. I mean, if we can put it in a way that's usable by the consultants we would assign, I don't think it necessarily has to be a strict hypothesis.
Okay. Going on then to GAC recommendation 13, and what they said, what are the legal jurisdictional issues raised by GTLD registries and registrars that adhere to local law applicable to domain name registrations and WHOIS requirements, but may then be in contravention to other legal jurisdictions where they conduct business? And the proposed wording of the hypothesis here, and again, I thank you guys for taking a stab at this, because these are pretty hard to turn into hypotheses. Those GTLD registries or registrars in Category A, I assume that's Category A above, right, under GAC number 12, provide a contractual mechanism or have had a mechanism imposed upon them by law or tribunal decision to resolve any conflicts between the law applicable to their WHOIS requirements and the law of any other jurisdiction.
This is Steve. I read this GAC recommendation number 13 as referring to the situation addressed by Part A of number 12, where the law of the local jurisdiction of the registry or registrar that controls. It says registries and registrars that adhere to local law applicable to domain name registrations and WHOIS requirements.
And that seems like an accurate conclusion. Does anybody disagree with that?
This is Steve DelBianco. I agree with it, but I believe we should state that without referring back to Category A and just simply say that registries are registrars that are governed by the laws of their local jurisdiction, as opposed to referring back to Category A of the Act 12.
That's an easy adjustment, and I think that is a good idea. If these things ever get separated in some sense or looked at independently, it makes it clear regardless, without any reference to another document.
So would that read those GTLD registries or registrars that are governed by a local jurisdiction?
I'll defer to Steve Del Bianco on this.
This is outside my area of expertise, Steve. How would you say it so that it can stand alone and not have to meet?
You know, I think ultimately what we want to do, and you'll see this when we get to the next one, is kind of combine these three, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of these can be combined. So
if we did that, it would be, you know, then it would be one package, and we wouldn't be referring back.
So should we hold off then maybe until we decide how to combine them?
I think that would make
good.
Okay, is that anybody opposed to that? Now, should we change, is the tribunal decision in this one okay as it stands now? Now, maybe irrelevant in a minute, but should we change that or is there some other language, or is it okay there? Again, Patrick's question is, again, I don't understand the inclusion of the words tribunal decision.
We could say by law or binding decision or something like that.
Yeah, why don't we do that? By law or binding decision. Again, it may become irrelevant if we combine some of these, but is that okay, Liz?
Yes, I've got it.
Okay. Any other comments on GAC recommendation number 13? And then GAC recommendation 14, may a GTLD domain name registrant who is a legal resident of one country apply for a domain name in another and claim to be under the legal jurisdiction of the latter and not the former. I think that it probably is an accurate assessment that it comes under, probably under 12. Is there any disagreement with that? And some of these things, in my opinion, really aren't studies in the hypothesis testing sense so much as evaluation of laws and so forth out there, but we can deal with that later.
So you're suggesting that study number 14 is encompassed by study number
12? The hypothesis is incorporated in number 12. Is that right, James and Steve?
Yeah, I think they're asking, you know, can you as the registrant choose to be covered by the law of the registrar's jurisdiction rather than your own jurisdiction? And that's really another way of asking, is A or B under 12 the case?
I agree with that.
A says the laws of their local jurisdiction, B is laws of jurisdiction.
Somebody else wanted to comment?
This is David.
Go ahead, David.
I agree with that. I think this is it duplicates 12.
Okay. Let's go on to 15, and then we'll talk about possibility of combining some or all of these. The GAC recommendation 15 was how can conflicts of laws be resolved in a global domain space? Hypothesis here is out of scope for proposed, it's not really a hypothesis, excuse me. The statement is this is out of scope for proposed studies of key factual issues. Anybody disagree with that? It seems accurate to me. I mean, this kind of goes back to the who is policy on where there's conflicts of laws and so forth that's kind of already been dealt with in a policy. One that I don't know that's ever been implemented, but it's there. Nobody has any disagreement with that. Then let's take a look then at combining some of these. On my first very preliminary effort, I had lumped all of these things in the same category. That may have been too much to combine, but I had lumped 23, 24, and then the four GAC recommendations, 12 through 15, all in the same category. Steve and James, what's your thinking on this?
Well, I think 24, this is Steve, I think 24 is somewhat different. 24 is about contract compliance, frankly. It's not about these issues of relation to the national laws.
Yeah, it makes sense. Okay.
But, the others, 23, I think they're certain, they could, I mean, 23 could be distinct also, but certainly the GAC recommendations 12, 13, and 14, I think, are really just all different ways of asking the same questions.
And Chuck, this is James. I would agree with Steve that we can probably look at the three GAC recommendations as different scenarios or contingencies of one. If we were to restate or add some language to number 12, it would probably eliminate the need for separate hypotheses for 13 and 14.
Does anybody disagree with that approach? And then my next question is how would you modify number 12 to incorporate the others? Or does it need modification?
Could we, this is Tim, could we just add a note that explains our thinking on these three, or do we need to somehow figure out how to combine them, or maybe they're left in a category of their own with a note?
What do you mean a category of their own? Each separate GAC recommendation?
These three or four GAC recommendations, and in some way, just being, instead of trying to figure out how to lump them all together, since they're four separate GAC recommendations, that we just note in our, in the report that, well, our thoughts about 12, 13, and 14, actually being interdependent, and so the hypotheses were constructed as interdependent. I don't know how.
I think that may be a good way to proceed.
Yeah,
it's the simplest way to proceed.
But so let's spend a lot of time, trying to combine them in some other way.
So what specifically then would we do with it? So we'd list all three of them separately, 12, 13, GAC 12, 13, and 14, and what would we say as a hypothesis for each? Would 13 and 14 just refer back up to 12? Is that what you're suggesting? I'm not clear, Tim.
No, I say we just leave it as it is, and we just add a note that says that that the group felt that GAC recommendations 12, 13, and 14 were interdependent, and so the hypotheses that were constructed are also interdependent.
Just okay. And where would you put that note?
I don't know, in this section perhaps, or
like we did in area one with the note that we put that Steve Del Bianco and who else created, you, and I think it was you, Tim, that created a note for that. That would work, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Did that make sense, Liz?
Yes. Right at the beginning of Area 2?
Yes.
Because we have 16 that, of course, is unrelated to that concept. But if that's
16 and 16 and 22, both, right?
Yeah.
And 23, I guess. And 24? What about 23? Are we going to keep it separate? Or do we lump it into that same group?
Which one, 23?
Yeah. I heard people say when we started this discussion on this area that it could be independent or it could be combined. What's the leaning of the group?
Could you read 23 in its present form? I'm getting lost in the documents here.
Sure. Some national data protection laws explicitly apply or have been adjudicated to apply to information submitted by GTLD registrants and made available via WHOIS.
That seems to me, this is David, that seems to me separate.
Everybody okay? Anybody not okay with that? So we'll leave 23 separate. We'll leave 24 separate, and we will combine GACs 12, 12 through 14, and 15 will be not applicable for the exercise. Is that correct? And we have a comment up at the top that will relate to the interdependence of 12, 13, and 14. Liz, are you with us on this?
Yes, I am. And then 23 is a standalone. Is that right?
That's correct. 23 and 24 will both be standalone.
Got it. Yes.
Okay? You're up to speed. I don't want to go too fast for you.
No, I'm good. I've got it.
Okay, good. Any other questions on Area 2? Okay. And then what we'll do, just like we're doing each week, we'll come back and there will be an opportunity certainly during the week to comment on these once Liz distributes them and post them on the wiki. And then we'll allow a brief amount of time at the beginning of our meeting next week to see if there's any other comments, and then we'll move on. Let's go to Area 3. And Steve Del Bianco provided some hypotheses and put them right into the wiki for us here. For Area 3, and let's go to that area. Now, I need to get another document up here. Does anybody have the original hypotheses readily available? Or should I get, I can get those up as well, so... I'll just pull them up right now. So, we're in Area 2, excuse me, Area 3, and the study submission number 2, and maybe Steve Del Bianco, since you proposed that one, maybe I should just let you talk about what was originally intended there and go ahead and talk about the hypothesis that you proposed and is in the wiki now.
Sure, Chuck. So Area 3 on availability of privacy services gets to the supply side of privacy protection services. Later we'll talk about, I guess, Area 4, which is the demand side of privacy protection services. There were two study submissions, mine and then Alan Levin in number 5. And then the GAC had two questions, questions 7 and 8, which we tried to apply a hypothesis for. The overarching theme of this section, of this area, is that we think that registrants already have options to effectively shield their personal information from who is, namely the proxy registration. And study submission number 2, I had two parts when I prepared. I had two parts that were tested. I said the hypothesis that I just stated, it could be falsified if the analysis showed that registrants don't have an effective, affordable way to shield their personal information. So I said effective and affordable because I got the notion that it might be too expensive for some people. And I said that hypothesis ought to be tested by our consultants for any of the top-level domains that collect and display a registrant's fluid data. And I had posited the fact that if they found registrants have at least one affordable privacy protection available, then the hypothesis, you know, would be held true. I wrote in here a second sentence under the hypothesis to sort of guide our consultants because I want them to dig deep, that if they discover that in certain GTLD registries, there are registrars offering proxy services, but people are not picking them, they're not selecting them as a significant or growing trend of registrars, then either the costs don't justify the benefits or people are not aware of them. So some of this will require judgment on the part of our consultants to determine whether the proxy opportunities are presented to registrars at the time they buy a domain name. My guess is that they are because the registrars often earn money for providing that service, and so they would want to make that available to somebody at registration. So with your indulgence, I was going to leave the second sentence in the hypothesis area because it suggests a second hypothesis that should be tested.
Why don't you go ahead on number 2 and read both sentences there for everybody.
Great. First one says, registrants presently have options to effectively shield their personal information from public display and who is, that is, through proxy services offered by registrars and by third parties. And that's the original hypothesis I had submitted for number 2. I've added from the original a second sentence which says, if a significant number of registrants are aware of the option to use proxy services but do not select them, we can conclude that the cost of proxy services do not justify the benefits of privacy protection. And it's stated like a hypothesis for somebody to test.
Any discussion on those two sentences? For number
that was
two?
David.
Go ahead, David.
I am uncomfortable with the second sentence. Determining realistically how many registrants are aware of the option, I think, is enormously difficult. I don't mind a study that determines the, say, the on a sampling basis or whatever it is, the availability and the use and the number of registrants who take up the option to use a proxy, but to go on to the conclusion, I don't think that's a either a factual or legal hypothesis. It's an argument, and I think the argument part in that, which is the second sentence, doesn't belong in a hypothesis to be studied.
Well, isn't it a hypothesis that could be tested to be false as well? So
it may be that it turns out that 90% of registrars offer proxies, but only 2% of registrants use them. You can draw any number of conclusions from that, but I think that the second sentence, the way it's worded, is not a hypothesis. It's an ultimate conclusion that certainly would be argued by those who say that proxies aren't worth the money being charged, and the public doesn't use them if that's what the facts show. But I don't think that conclusion should be a part of the hypothesis that we're studying. The hypothesis should be simply what's available and how much is used.
Well, and what if we simplify that second sentence? Like, for example, the cost of proxy services does not justify the benefits of privacy protection.
Well, but that's the argument.
it's not an argument. It's a hypothesis to test. So,
and we all sort of boxed in to try to state things in terms of a hypothesis. When we put the work into submitting study submission number two, it's 2 pages long, and I included in there all the data capture that I was requesting. And the data capture including getting the numbers that David Maher was just mentioning, getting the numbers of people that picked it out of the number that had an opportunity to pick it. But the way this was proceeding is that we sort of set aside all of our original data collection requests, and we're left only with hypotheses that we can pass along to the consultants. And that means we have to load these hypotheses with questions that beg the collection of the data we originally thought we needed.
Well, Tim, can I get in the queue?
Go ahead, Tim. Jump right in.
I wanted to make sure Steve was done, and I sound like I might have cut him off.
No,
were you done, Steve?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I understand David's concern, and I guess I have the same concern. You know, this is actually Steve's proposal, so I guess I'm not inclined to argue with him a lot about what his hypothesis is. I'd just say that you know, as just thinking about deliberating this later on the council, Steve, I just wonder if the way that's worded won't do more harm than good in getting this study seriously considered. And the reason I say that is because of the concerns that David mentioned. That a significant number of registrants, you know, aren't aware of, or are aware but don't select proxy services. I'm not sure I would assume then that would automatically conclude that the reason is that the costs of the service are not justified by the benefits. It would seem to me that would be a number of others might feel the same way, and that could influence the decision on that. So just give that some thought. If there isn't a
better way to do it without, because I think there's, like David said, there's a number of conclusions that could be drawn from that. It doesn't necessarily mean that the only reason they're not selecting that is because the costs don't, you know, are not justified by the benefits.
And I see the problem with the logic there, and that's why I wonder if we can just simplify this, because it does seem like it would be not. It may be worth considering doing a study to see whether the cost of privacy services is precluding some people from using them.
Absolutely. How do you state that in a hypothesis? Because it's a rigid structure.
Well, what I stated could be a hypothesis. The cost of privacy services precludes some registrants from using them.
This is Jordy.
Agreeable to that.
Sorry.
Jordy, go ahead.
Yeah, just one point there. I think that I partially agreement with David and the last person who spoke. The idea is the following. I mean, if we do that, I mean, besides cost, there are other variables that merge in the process on that decision, that may be the how easy is to set that on the interface of the registrar, if it's well explained, the level of skills of the user. So I don't think that just cost, as it's written right now, is the variable that has to prove the hypothesis. Maybe the question could be rephrased, saying something like, how much would you be paying for getting your privacy protected by a proxy service or whatever. Then we do have a measure of the cost, but of course that's going to be different in every part of the world because of the different levels and salaries and all that.
Thank you, Jordy. Well, it seems to me, first of all, see if I'm correct on this, it seems like these two sentences should first of all be listed as two separate hypotheses under number two rather than one paragraph. I don't know if that's useful or not. But they don't necessarily have to be dependent, I don't think.
Agreed.
Do you agree with that, Steve? Okay.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any problems with the first sentence being the first hypothesis? Okay, so we're okay on that one. So the question is can we simplify the second one as a separately listed hypothesis under number two? And does somebody have a better wording than what I proposed?
Excuse me, Chuck, just one question. Regarding the first sentence on Area 3, item number 2, or whatever, I mean, the second there, I mean, is the first sentence really an hypothesis, or is it just describing a fact? So, registrants, options, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, it becomes if it can be verified to be true, then it becomes a fact, right? So I'm not sure I understand, Jordy, what you're asking.
Well, my idea is that if I'm reading the first sentence, registrants presently have options to effectively shield their personal information. I think that, yes, they do. I mean, more or less, we know that there are offers in the market to do so, and we know of practices that certain registrars do. The point is that we don't know if this is at 10% or 90%, but my understanding is that, well, this describes the fact. Yes, there are registrars that offer that service. So that my question was on that direction.
Steve Del Bianco, do you want to respond to that?
Jordy, if you were able to read the actual study that was submitted, I included in there all the data that we requested, a survey of registrars and third-party providers within each GTLD, as well as the cost per month, the number of people that have picked it, and the trend over the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
So the data that you just spoke of is all in the study submission. But when one has to state it in terms of a hypothesis, you don't usually put the data gathering in the hypothesis. Again, the structure that we've proposed here is causing us all to ignore the data that we wanted, because the conclusion here was that if we state a hypothesis, the expert consultant will go out and determine what the data is that they ought to gather.
And they will have access to the detailed studies that were proposed.
Right.
Evaluating the cost of a study, and then if we pursue it in developing the study itself.
So then can we say that the answer to the first hypothesis, that sentence, is already on that study that was submitted? Because if the data is there,
can conclude the answer.
That's the idea of doing a study. Right. I mean, yes-no answer is of no value at all at creating policy. A yes-no answer would be useless. What we really want is the actual statistics, trending over time, so we can understand whether people are picking it when they can, and what percentage, and is it growing.
And we talked about that last week, that we shouldn't assume that a study is only going to produce yes-no answers, okay? That the data behind the response is every bit as important, maybe more so, as Steve just said, in the study. So I suggest that we leave the first one alone for now. Again, if there are people that still want to revisit that during the week and at the beginning of our meeting next time, we can do that. Does anybody have an alternative suggestion for the second sentence other than what I proposed, which was basically the cost of proxy services precludes some registrants from using them?
That's fine by me, Chuck.
Any problems with that? Keep in mind, and I'll probably have to say this each week, but ultimately the council, in consultation with the full constituencies and so forth, is going to have to decide what studies they want to pursue further, and the next step being to get cost estimates for studies. So we're not suggesting that all of these, in fact, we know that all of these probably won't be able to be done, because it would be cost prohibitive. So any other comments on study number two? Okay, let's go to study number five and take a look at that one.
Is Alan on the line? Alan Levin?
I don't think so.
This one, it wasn't difficult to paraphrase. We went right back to Alan's original suggestion number five and used his hypothesis.
Hold on a second. I'm trying to scroll around. Does anybody have that, the original handy?
It says, at present, allows resellers and registrars to offer privacy services, which is an opportunity for these industry players to differentiate themselves on value rather than reputation only. So, again, it stated as a hypothesis, and a yes-no answer would be useless to us. We actually want statistics on the differentiation amongst offerers of proxy services. Ideally, it ties in with the things I submitted in number two, because some registrars are differentiating themselves by featuring privacy protection for $10 a year. That would be great to understand whether they're attracting a greater number of registrants who take it up. And that would help to answer the question we proposed in the first submission here, which was, does the cost affect the take-up rate?
Any discussion in that, on that?
This is Tim, just if I can get in the queue.
Sure. Go ahead, Tim.
I wonder if just a slight edit to it might be better. If to the who is at present allows resellers and registrars to offer privacy services and is used by them as an opportunity to differentiate themselves on value, or and is used as an opportunity for these industry players to differentiate themselves on value.
Well, and have used these services to differentiate themselves. Even shorter, to take out the opportunity.
Yeah, just to make more of a sort of a little less subjective of that second part and more of a statement.
So run that by me again, please.
I think Steve had a little bit better wording, but the who is the president allows resellers and registrars to offer privacy services and is used to differentiate themselves on value. Rather than reputation only, whatever.
Steve, are you okay with that modification? Do you want to work
it out? We could even make it shorter. We could say that they allow registrars and registrars to offer privacy services to differentiate themselves on value.
Does that work, Tim?
Sure.
Any discussion or objections to that? Okay. Five, then we'll accept as okay with that modification. Liz, you have that?
Yes, I do.
Thanks. Going to GAC 7 then, And I finally opened up another screen so that I can jump to these a little more readily. And GAC 7 was, what is the historical trend and current percentage of the registrars and their affiliates, proxy and privacy registrations, in relation to the total number of domain registrations and TLDs? Now, Steve, you want to talk to what you did on that?
Yes, I picked up on there. Word of trend and the percentages, and said that a growing share of registrants are protecting the privacy of their WHOIS data by using proxy registrations and or privacy services. That's stating it as a hypothesis.
Any discussion on that? Any objections to that?
Just a question. This is James.
Go ahead, James.
Reading the original question, it just mentions historical trend, and how did we translate that into a growing share?
Since I have to make it into a hypothesis, James, I have to say either a growing or a shrinking or a flat share so that it's a testable question. You with me on that?
Yeah, I guess it could, yeah.
Again, be careful not to look at these statements as conclusions, okay? Steve isn't saying that there's a growing share. It's just that in testing the hypothesis, he picked one of the three choices there so that it can be tested. The result could actually show a shrinking share, or it could show, you know, fairly stable situation. Does that make sense, James?
It does, and I see it's consistent with the hypothesis with GAC 8, so I'm fine with that.
Okay. Anybody else have a comment on 7? GAC 7? Okay, let's go to GAC 8. What is the percentage of registrars and all affiliates that offer proxy or privacy registration? Obviously, that's a pretty question to answer without a study, it seems to me. But let's look at, Steve, we want to talk what you did there?
I implied growth by saying the hypothesis is that a growing share of registrars and affiliates are offering proxy registration and or privacy service. And Chuck, if I could add a clarification, I had explored this extensively in study submission number 2, that some of the questions that would have to be asked to answer the hypothesis can be done by simply surveying what registrars are offering. And that's a relatively easy matter with 800 total registrars and figuring out what they offer and what they don't. The separate work is to go out and ask questions of registrars to say what percentage of registrants who bought domain names in the last 12 months selected privacy services, and what is that percentage by month and compared to last year. That's a lot more work to get, but both questions are important.
Okay. Any comments, discussion on that? Any problems with what Steve did on GAC 8? Okay, good. Let's go to Area 4. And, Tim, this is an area that you helped us on in drafting some hypotheses for consideration by the group. So I'll look to you to kind of to respond. I'll go ahead and kick each one off. Let's start off with Study 17. And that one was submitted by Claudio DeGangi from INTA. I'm sure I mispronounced that. Survey proxy privacy service registrants to determine their reasons for using a proxy service. And Tim, can you pick it up from there and talk about what you proposed?
Right. The original hypothesis was that the bulk of proxy privacy service users shield their identity for improper purposes. So my concern with that was that how would you find out what users' intent is? If it truly was for improper purposes, they're not likely to respond much to any kind of survey or study. So I revised it to focus on the way the domain names were being used, which may be something that's testable, and also try to define a little bit more distinctly improper purposes. So the proposed revised hypothesis is The majority of domain names registered by proxy privacy services are used for abusive and or illegal purposes.
Thanks. Any discussion on that? Question? Any objections to wording it the way Tim worded it? Okay. Going on then, and again, I lumped several suggested studies together in this and may have been off base in doing that, but anyway, I did it, so we're working from that start. And so 18, 19, GAC 9, and GAC 10, I had all kind of lumped together because they seem related. We can decide whether that's the right way, to, right thing to do or not as we move forward on this. Study submission 18 was submitted by Claudio again. Sample proxy service registrants and review their sites to determine what percentage are likely individual registrants concerned about their privacy. And I think his hypothesis was that the majority of registrations by proxy are used commercially in order to profit from domain registrations, not by individuals concerned about privacy. So, I mean, that hypothesis itself is fairly well worded from a just from a hypothesis point of view. Tim, you want to comment on that?
I thought that you're probably right. It is a pretty good stated hypothesis, except that when we look at the testability, my concern was whether we could actually determine the intent of individuals, or if we'd be able to somehow survey or get some kind of response. You know, if individuals really are concerned with privacy, how likely they're going to be to respond, or how likely we're going to be to get the data we need, considering that they're keeping that private. So I revised it, not a massive change, but just simply stated that different privacy rights attach to natural persons than to legal persons. Majority of domain names registered by proxy privacy services are for commercial purposes and not for use by natural. And then, you know, based on the data collected, you know, other conclusions might be drawn, but that the determining that the domains or the majority of the proxy privacy services are used for commercial purposes and not by natural persons would be something that could be possibly determined, or that data could be collected.
Thanks, Tim. Discussion.
This is Steve Metalitz.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I wasn't sure that the first sentence in the revised version is a testable hypothesis.
In fact, isn't that something that there's pretty broad agreement about in the community?
Well, yeah, I think as a general matter, I would think there is, but I'm just not sure how this would test that. I think the second sentence is a testable. Maybe a testable hypothesis, because you look at how these names are being used and classify them in one of two boxes.
Tim, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I guess I was trying to just as part of the reasoning for some of the hypotheses, but I think you're right. They're probably not necessary. It's kind of repeated throughout the rest of those, actually. The real hypothesis is just the second sentence. That's true.
Thanks. Is there a comfort level with that second sentence then? The majority of domain names by proxy privacy services are used by for commercial purposes and not for use by natural persons? Any objections to that? Liz, please let me know if at any point we jump ahead, go too fast for you. I'm sure.
I've got it. Thank you.
Okay. So, what we have for 18 is okay. We'll talk about the whole group in a minute, but let's look at 19 then. And 19 was also by Claudio. Sample WHOIS records to determine what percentage of registrations are owned by natural persons legal persons and proxy services, and two, survey registrars to gather similar information as well as information about requests to reveal the identity of the registrant. And his stated hypothesis was different privacy rights attached to natural persons than to legal persons. And we're back to that, what we talked about just a minute ago. The study would determine the proportion of each, as well as the extent of proxy registrations in which the legal or natural status of the underlying registrant is unavailable, in order to attempt to tailor WHOIS improvements to the different populations. And then, Tim, I'll turn it over to you to take it from there.
Yeah, and this one I struggled with a little bit, and I probably just sort of gave up, more or less.
But I
tried to get just to be a little more succinct, but this really isn't a hypothesis from my point of view. But basically, the revised one, this is where I picked up that language, different privacy rights attached to natural persons and legal persons, knowing the distribution of domain name registrations between natural persons, legal persons, and proxy privacy services would benefit future WHOIS policy work. That's more of a reason for the study, I guess, than it is a hypothesis based on it. But I struggled because it's a study that's just suggesting a collection of data, and it's really difficult to draw a hypothesis that's being intended there. Like, it's just a matter of trying to determine, you know, what percentage of registrations, how they break out between legal, natural persons, and proxy privacy services.
I
guess I just kind of left that to everybody to discuss today, I guess.
So let's discuss it. What's the thinking on this one? Anybody want to jump in the queue?
This is Steve. It's a little hard, Metallic. This is a little hard to determine quite what this is directed at, but it almost seems like because the second part, I'm looking at the second part of the little summary of the submission. Survey registrars gather similar information as well as information about requests to reveal the identity of the registrant. And I'm wondering if there's a sense here that we're trying to find out if the proportion of the proportion of registrants who are legal persons or natural persons different between the WHOIS database as a whole and those registrations that give rise to requests to proxy services to reveal identity. I think that may be what he's driving at here. So another the hypothesis would be something like individual registrants who use proxy services are more likely to be the subject of requests to reveal their identity than are legal persons who use proxy services.
Other thoughts on that?
I'm trying to parse out what number two is about.
And that could be somebody else. Let's go back to what Tim suggested and compare to what Steve was suggesting there. And let's forget that first sentence again. And then knowing the distribution of domain name registrations between natural persons, legal persons, and proxy privacy services would benefit future WHOIS policy work. Now, that may be a value judgment, rather than a testable hypothesis. I don't know. But Steve, again, can you repeat what you're suggesting the author of this one might have?
I guess one way to put it would be that individual registrants,
natural persons, you say, right?
I'm sorry. Yes, natural persons who use proxy services for registration. Are disproportionately the subject of requests to reveal the identity of the registrant.
Let me I like the way that's worded in terms of it's something that would be very, it seems very useful to find, to know that.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, and it could be the other way around, but I mean, it's...
Yeah, right, right. I understand.
Right.
All of these could be the other way around,
right.
Depending on how we word them, and hopefully if a study was done, it would
answer
reveal
that.
So, Tim, what do you think about what Steve did there?
So it's a disproportionate share of proxy privacy registrant.
Yeah. You know, maybe another way to put it is just kind of reverse that and say a disproportionate share of requests to reveal the identity of registrants who use proxy services are directed to registrations made by natural persons.
Disproportionate share is the same thing as saying they are more likely to be the subject of reveal requests. Is that an easier way to phrase it? The natural persons are more likely to be the subject?
No,
of
not necessarily,
requests.
Because
no?
What if natural persons are 30% of the group, but they generate 40% of the requests? They're still less
then
likely.
Be more like, but they would be then more likely than the legal person to generate a request.
Well, the majority of requests would not be about them, though. So that's the only
I didn't say majority, but it's more likely. But I'm just trying to be helpful. So if you think disproportionate captures it, that's fine.
Well,
Tim, do you have a comment on that? Did you understand what Steve's proposing there?
Yeah. You know, I don't have a problem with it. I'm just trying to... look at Claudio's proposed study. You know, there's a number of things that could, you know, could be driving towards, and this certainly could be one of them. But no, I don't have any issue with it.
So should we? Is anybody opposed to stating it the way Steve Metallus suggested?
Steve, could you please reread it?
Yeah, a disproportionate share of requests to reveal the identity of registrants who use proxy services is directed to registrants who are natural persons.
You need him to break that down, Liz, or you got it?
I just need him to say it one more time. I'm close to getting it.
Okay. A disproportionate share of requests to reveal the identity of registrants who use proxy services is directed to registrants who are natural persons.
Got it. Thank you.
Any objections to that? Okay, let's go to GAC number 9. Let's try and get GAC 9 and 10 done and then talk about the grouping of these things before we get action items for next week. GAC 9, what are the relative percentages of legal persons and natural persons that are GTLD registrants that also utilize proxy or privacy services? Obviously very closely related to the other things that we've been talking about. And Tim, you want to talk to that?
Yeah, just again, ignoring the first sentence, the hypothesis I'm proposing is a significant share of proxy privacy service users are legal persons. Just trying to draw some intent from the GAC's recommendation, similar to what Steve was doing with Study 19 there. And again, that could go, you know, a significant portion are natural persons.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But one of the other, in order to have the testable hypotheses.
Any problems with that second sentence then on what Tim did? Any suggested edits? Okay. Then number 10, GAC 10, was what are the relative percentages of domain names for commercial versus non-commercial purposes that are registered using proxy or privacy services? Again, very closely related. And Tim, you want to talk to that one?
Yeah, and I just... Again, very, very similar hypotheses that a significant share of domains that are registered using proxy privacy services are used for commercial purposes. Again, you know, it could be non-commercial purposes either way, but one or the other creates testable hypotheses.
Any objections to that or any suggested edits?
This is Steve DelBianco.
Go ahead, Steve.
I think these are outstanding ways to phrase it. And as I read 10.11, the GAC didn't ask about trending, right? So that they're not implying that things are going up or down over time. And then, accordingly, you didn't reflect a growing share or shrinking share. So there's no implication in the way you stated the hypothesis, but we want to know the trend here. So my question would be, do we want to infer that we're interested to know whether there's a growing or shrinking substantial share? If we don't ask it, I don't know whether the consultants will gather.
So what's your specific suggestion?
Well, if the group felt it was also important to get the answer to trend, we would have to stick the word growing in front of substantial so that the trend would be investigated as part of the hypothesis.
Do we have that captured, or is it different in what we did for GAC 7 and Area 3?
This is Tim. You know, I don't disagree with that, but I'm wondering if that isn't two hypotheses, because if you say... If you just say a growing share, then that may not be
growing
to the relative percentages, you know, between the two.
Yeah, Tim, I would only offer growing and substantial. I would not want to replace substantial.
So is that an additional hypothesis, then? Or a rewording?
I would suggest that it's an additional word in the current one.
A growing and significant share. Is that what you were suggesting, Steve?
Yes, Tim, if you felt that the trend is going to be an interesting thing to learn.
So we would change what, for GAC, would that apply to both 9 and 10?
Yes.
So a growing and significant share of, and then the rest stays the same in both cases?
That would be my suggestion.
I'm good with that.
Any objections? Liz, were you able to keep up with us on that?
Yes, I've got it. Thanks.
For both GAC 9 and GAC 10?
Yes.
Now, we're just about out of time, and I don't think we have time to talk about maybe combining 18, 19, and GAC 9 and 10. Would anybody or a small group of people want to look at that between now and our next meeting to see if there's a way that we could kind of combine those? Or maybe people think that they're just fine all as separate ones, even though they're very closely related. Any thoughts on that before we talk about volunteers? Might it be valuable to combine these into one or two?
Chuck, this is Steve. I would say if we have willing volunteers, let's focus them on the categories we haven't even got to yet. And maybe if we still have time at the end of our deadline, we could maybe go back and do a run of consolidating.
I'm okay with that. Anybody disagree with that approach? Okay. Then thanks, everybody, on those. And then Liz will create a red line document to show what changes were made and distributed, and we'll also enter the things for area 2 through 4 that we've done today into the wiki, so we can also see them there. What we now need to do is to get some assignments for the future areas, and we need some new volunteers, and my compliments to the volunteers so far. You guys have done great work, and so we need a volunteer for Area 5, impact of who is data protection on crime and abuse, Area 6, which is proxy registrar compliance with law enforcement and dispute resolution requests, Area 7, which is who is data accuracy, Area 8, other GAC recommendations. So there's four areas remaining. It'd be nice if we could get a volunteer for each. I don't know whether we'll get to all of those next week, but just in case, it'd be nice to have it done. Any volunteers? And first one to volunteer gets to pick the area. So if you have a favorite, you might want to jump in.
Steve Metallic, this is Steve Del Bianco. If you'll work with me, we could do maybe Area 6, because I can't do it alone. I don't know the legal end.
Metallic, yeah. Would you be willing to work
with me? Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, so we've got... So
Del Bianco
for
taking
Area 6, we've got both Steves.
With Del Bianco taking the lead.
Okay.
Okay. Doc, this is James.
James, yes?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and volunteer for Area 7.
Area 7 for James, okay. I just need two more volunteers for Area 5 and 6. Area 5 is impact of who is data protection on crime and abuse. And Area 6 is proxy registrar compliance with law enforcement and dispute resolution requests. My mistake. I realized what I did. We need Area 5 and Area 8. Area 8 is the other GAC recommendations. And if we don't get anyone for that one, Eric, blank on his name right now, actually submitted something to me that may work for that. So let's focus on Area 5 and getting a volunteer for Area 5, which is impact of... who is data protection on crime and abuse?
I can do that if you want, Chuck. It's Tony Harris.
Thank you very much, Tony. That would be great. And then, again, if you can get them to the list with some lead time before our meeting next Tuesday, and also post them, it's pretty easy. All you do is go into the edit function and then just paste them into the table that's in there in our wiki. If you have trouble with that and you want me to do that, just give me some lead time because sometimes shortly before the meetings I don't have very much time, like today. So,
okay, no problem.
If for some reason you can't do that, let me know. Give me at least a day's lead time so I can get that done.
No problem.
Okay?
Okay.
So we've got Area 5, Tony Harris, Area 6, the two Steves with Steve Del Bianco taking the lead, and Area 7, James Volunteer. Now, our meeting will be the same time next Tuesday, and Liz will... I'll do a very brief recap on this meeting, and then Liz will... we've already talked about her action items. We've got the volunteers. I'll take a look at what Eric has done on the GAC things and send something out on that.
So, Chuck, my only challenge, Liz, is that I'll probably need to send this out tomorrow because I'm jumping on a plane real soon.
That should be fine, Liz.
Okay. I'll definitely do it in the morning.
In fact, you'll notice in the agenda that for both you and I put not later than the 23rd. So that's tomorrow.
Perfect.
So you're covered. All right. Hey, thanks, everybody. We made some good progress today. Again, take a look at what we did, and if you have any comments, additional suggestions, if you can send them to the list, we'll allow a brief time to go for additional comments at the beginning of the meeting, but we really want to focus on the subsequent areas.
Hey, Chuck, this is Tim.
Yes, Tim.
Just real quick, I won't be on the call on Tuesday. I'll be traveling. But I'll keep an eye on the list and before then, and as people post anything, I'll offer.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
Okay.
And thanks for letting us know. Anybody else have a comment before we close? Okay, meeting adjourned. Have a good rest of the day.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks, Chuck.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Chuck.
Bye.